Hey, welcome back to the Lyrica Snippet. My name is Jeffrey Way. Today we got a Q&A. We haven't done this in a handful of months. Since then, I've slowly built up a scratch file, basically, of various questions that will often come in through Twitter or email or YouTube or live streams and things of that nature. So why don't we get right into it? Maybe you'll find a couple here that will be beneficial to you. Number one, Jeffrey, what is one thing you'd do differently if you built Lyricast all over again today? This is a good question, something you should ask for your own product or whatever you happen to work on. I think there's countless things I would do differently. I've iterated on the code base many times, and this often ends up being a problem because it's kind of fun, actually. If you consider your code base of any size, just because maybe you adopt a new style of doing things, doesn't mean you can suddenly go to the old code and update all of it. It's just not practical, especially if it's working perfectly. Sometimes the appropriate thing is just leave it alone. You can address it when you need to tweak it or change the functionality, but until then, just leave it alone. It's not a great use of your time to completely rewrite it. For smaller projects, yes, you can absolutely just start over from scratch, but again, for anything of size, it's not necessarily worth your time. So sometimes you can go through your code base and kind of pick up on different phases of your career. Like you can go to this section and you can see, oh, I was actually interested in this style at that time. But over here, I kind of abandoned that approach and I took this route instead. So it's very easy to see those things when you look at the code base. So that would be one thing. I can't actually say I would do it differently, though, because it's just a reality of growing as a developer. One thing I would do differently is, I think, and this is fairly obvious for anyone who's been with the site for since the beginning, I iterated on the UI, on the design, too much in the early days. And that was just a situation where the site became successful long before I think I was ready for it to become successful. So I was still kind of in the iterating, figuring out how I wanted things to work phase. But in those early days, the site became successful almost on day one. So I was left in this boat of still trying to tweak and iterate on it. And my design skills just simply aren't there. So it takes me much longer to zero in on what I want. So I think anyone who was a member of the site back then probably did notice that I tweaked it, often only in the shape of like, well, now we're using this color instead of that color, changing the branding left and right. But again, it's still in this kind of rocky water days. So I think it was okay, but I probably wouldn't do it again. If I started over from scratch, I would pay good money to work with a dedicated person or team to help me figure out what the UI should be. All right, number two, what's a controversial thing you believe? It doesn't specify here if we're talking about code or real life, so we're going to do both. I think in the realm of code, probably I would say this, the thing that I've had the most backlash about was that lesson where I talked about my ideas related to visual noise, the idea of noise in your files. Everything from interfaces and type hints to return types to comments to doc blocks. All of that stuff. And the idea I was trying to suggest in that video, and maybe I didn't do it as well as I could, but the idea I was trying to suggest, what I was trying to suggest was like the noise that hits your eyes every time you open the file. It grows and grows exponentially. And you do get to a point where it's like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on here that I have to take in. And every time I open this file, I have to relearn it. And it wears you down. And I think anyone who's ever worked on kind of an over, what you might call an over-engineered code base, you feel it, right? It feels like a wave hits you. It's too much. And you'll especially notice this if you go to, where I see the most glaring difference is if you go to like a typical Ruby project and you open up one of their classes and it's so very, very simple. Like the convention is not even to really use any form of doc blocks. Of course, that varies from team to team, but in general, you'll open up a Ruby class and it's so simple and elegant. And then you compare that sometimes to like the recommended enterprise-y way of building up your PHP projects and not the biggest fan. So the idea I was trying to get across was to to consider these things. You don't immediately reach for these things just because, hey, that's what you do. You reach for them because you have a very good reason why they are necessary. So that's probably the most controversial code thing, at least based on the overwhelming responses I received. That's probably the most controversial thing I've ever said. Outside of code, I mean, we all have countless things that we subscribe to and believe that we may not even vocalize, but that's just the reality. So yeah, maybe that's what we'll go with. I think when it comes to politics, especially in the tech world and on Twitter and social media, there is an accepted viewpoint, and then there is a not accepted viewpoint. And I think that is so incredibly dangerous. So it's very clear, the more left your politics and your ideology, the more socially acceptable it is for you to share it and tweet about it 30 times a day. And in reverse, the more right your opinions lean, the more it's not acceptable, and the more likely, in fact, that you will not share your views on social media because you do not want to be targeted. You do not want to be attacked. And it's just, you know, you may say that's being dramatic, and it's absolutely not. My instinct is, even in the tech world, it's mostly 50. I mean, we're kind of talking US here a little bit because it's so polarized. Outside of the United States, it's not quite so much. But in the US, it's very polarized where you have more left-wing and more right-wing. My instinct is, even in developer circles, it's close to 50-50. Maybe a little more, like 70-30, but it's still close to 50-50. And the way it feels when you're on Twitter, though, is it's 95-5. It overwhelmingly favors one side of the political spectrum. And this is good for no one. But that's the situation we find yourself in. Even if you consider yourself a liberal, it should not make you feel good to know that those who disagree with you remain silent because they do not want to make their views known, because they don't want to deal with the backlash. And the amount of backlash you see, it's insane. People have been targeted, they're ganged up on, they are attacked on social media en masse, they lose their jobs, they are humiliated, all for having basic conservative views. And it's sad to me that this even has to be said. It is not okay. Painting those who disagree with you as racist, horrible, terrible bigots who want children to die because they don't think exactly the way you do, this is one of the most damaging, horrible things that I see on a daily basis. And it doesn't matter what your politics are. To say it again, that is not okay. And it's even more than anything, it is such a naive, lazy interpretation of those who disagree with you. It's such a dismissive interpretation. So that might be, sadly, something controversial, I believe, more in the realm of the development community as a whole. Okay, number three. A couple of years ago on the podcast, you discussed your worries related to having your first child. What are your thoughts now? Okay, this is a good one. Having a kid is probably the biggest adventure you will ever take on. I can still remember 2 years ago when my wife was pregnant for the first time. I was very, very nervous. You kind of fall back to your basic roles. So like mine as a husband and a future dad, my role was to get the world in order, right? I need to make sure, the things that I'm responsible for financially, this is okay. Structurally, everything's ready to go, right? I think men and women will often default to these basic instincts. You can't even control it. It just naturally happens to you. Now, what I did find was that after my wife gave birth, you're kind of uniquely designed to be able to handle these things. I was always worried about, like, what if we're exhausted and the baby's crying every 30 minutes and you can't wake up because you're so exhausted, and then I can't do my work. And it turns out, like, you kind of manage. You kind of find this state of constant exhaustion, but you still make your way through. You know, in the early days, they will often sleep much of the time, so you're okay. But then, as they get older, they sleep less, and there is no denying how exhausting a kid can be. Sometimes I get to bed at the end of the day, because like my day starts, and I shower, we do breakfast, and then I go up to work, and then I do that until 5-ish, and then I'm immediately playing with my daughter while we figure out dinner, and then we have to do bath time, and then we have to clean up the room, then we have to put her down, Then I try to work out for about 45 minutes at the end of the night, and then immediately to bed. And sometimes that constancy really gets to me. And it makes me miss, you know, being a teen. When you're a teenager complaining that you're so busy, no, you are not. It's not even close to the same. So you should really appreciate having four-hour blocks where you have nothing to do. I can't remember the last time where I had 4 or 5 hours where it's just do whatever you want. It almost never happens. Usually it's like, okay, I have a break right now. Maybe I finished up work early. I'm going to use that to go to Lowe's and I have to pick up mulch for the front of the yard. You know, you kind of end up taking care of adult things constantly to the point where you really look forward to these little 2 or 3 hour breaks that you might get every once in a while. And I know that maybe sounds a little negative on the whole idea. It's really not. I'm just being honest there. There is that element that gets to you. And I think any new parent would agree with that. The upside, of course, is you have this perfect human being that you fall in love with immediately. My daughter every single day just does things that cracks me. Like, she has a really good sense of humor. It's amazing how they learn these things. Even how she is learning to speak English, it still baffles me. She came in knowing nothing, and now she's responding to questions that we ask her. It's the most amazing thing in the world, and she makes jokes. She's figured out how to be funny and how to be goofy. So the connection that you form with them is so strong that it outweighs every possible piece of exhaustion that you might experience. And we'll wrap up because we still have a bunch more. But I think you have to become a parent to truly appreciate that bond you feel, because until you do, there's nothing in your life that even remotely compares to it. You know, that idea, like, let's say you're a man and some other guy hit on my girlfriend or my wife or grabbed her arm, you'd knock him out, right? So that's a natural reaction. But when it's your kid, like if somebody grabbed my one-year-old or slapped her or something like that, I think most dads in particular would agree, you will fucking kill them. Excuse my French, but that's the instinct you feel. It's not just you're going to knock them out. It's I will kill you. It's that strong a protective instinct. Anyways, it's great. Anyways, let's move on. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Jeffrey, lately I've found that I'm having trouble improving as a developer. Do you have any advice? So yeah, I think you will often hit this phase. No matter what you learn, you will hit plateaus. So you will figure something out and you'll coast a little bit, and then you'll reach a new plateau and then you'll coast a little bit. And every time you hit a new plateau, that coasting period grows and grows and grows before you hit a new plateau and you move up again. So it's, I would say, as long as you are chipping away at it as often as possible, reach for every day if you can, or at least Monday through Friday. As long as you are chipping away at it, there's no chance that you will not be better a year from now. And that's the mindset to get in. Are you learning and reading code and writing code mostly every single day to some extent? If the answer is yes, there is zero chance that 1 year from today, you will not be a much better developer than you are. And those three things are important. I'm actually talking about that in a series at Lyricast right now. The idea that if you want to improve, you need to learn, read, and write. So that means you need to learn from people more skilled from you. This is watching lessons at Lyricast. This is reading tech books. This is maybe having somebody mentor you if you're lucky enough. So you need to be learning. But that's not enough. And too often people focus on that phase to the detriment of these other two. Yes, you need them, but it's 1/3 of the puzzle. The second third is you need to read a lot of code. And this is hard because it's intimidating. Often you'll come across projects where you don't even know where to begin. So you just sort of keep it as a black box. You'll use the public API, but you're not really ever going to dig in and look at the files and figure out how it's constructed. This is a mistake. Read code that was not written by you as often as possible. And it doesn't mean that code is always going to be good code, but it's important for you to learn how different people structure things. It's incredibly important. And then the third tier is, of course, you need to write a lot of code. It's not enough to watch video tutorials or read books or read GitHub repositories. You need to write your own code. And often what happens is people, you don't yet have a job in the industry yet, and you don't exactly know what to write. So in these cases, toy projects, things that you can throw away, just anything if you want. You're going to make your version of a base camp, and it doesn't mean you're going to come even close to what they've done, but it doesn't matter. You're going to build the basic structure of like a project management system. Okay, do that. Go build the basic to-do list, you know, and then try to increase features once you have that. So begin by building the most basic possible text box. You fill it in, it adds to a list. But now, add a new feature. So you're going to have unique lists. So you can have a list for family, a list for work, a list for personal. And each of those lists have their own associated tasks. So once you implement that feature, bring it up a level. Now you're going to have different users who can sign in, and they can create brand new lists that are associated with tasks. So keep incrementing upon that. And the goal at this stage is not to release it. I mean, if it turns out great, then certainly. But the goal isn't necessarily to do that. The goal is like you're sitting in a practice room, right? So if I were learning an instrument, I would go into a practice room for 4 hours and just play other people's music. I would play scales over and over. You're practicing. You're getting your fingers in the flow. And the same thing is going to be true in this case. You're not trying to release anything. You're trying to get into the workflow of how you build applications. Okay, I can already tell this is going to go high on time. I might skip some of these. Let's see. You often switch between code editors. Why do you do this? I often switch between Sublime Text, Visual Studio Code, PHP Storm, Vim at some point. These days, I find that it's mostly Sublime Text and PHP Storm. And the reason for this is I found that there's a fatal flaw in every single editor. So some flaw that is annoying enough to me to the point that at some point I'm going to switch over here for a little while. But that other editor I'll switch to has some kind of fatal flaw as well, to the point that I'll eventually switch back or switch to something else. I wish you could find this editor that was perfect across the board, but it's like you have to make sacrifices. So if you want your editor to have a much greater understanding of your underlying PHP code, well, Sublime Text can't do that. You're going to have to switch to PHP Storm, but that doesn't come for free. There's a cost to that. You're going to slow things down. So the next time you're opening up PHP Storm or loading a file where the editor freezes, yeah, I often get to a point where it's like, oh my God, I'm going to switch back to Sublime, which is lightning fast. Or VS Code is kind of in between. There's some cool stuff there. I feel like no editor has solved the puzzle just yet. Each of them has gotten 90% of the way there. And it's that remaining 10% that often makes me want to go to the other one for a little while. But one thing I do recommend, if you take this approach, and I wouldn't recommend you do, just pick one and stick with it. It's a personality quirk that I do it. But if you are going to switch between them, make sure that your key bindings are identical across. So do not memorize the key binding for loading or quickly browsing to a file in PHP Storm, and then another one in Sublime. Just make sure it's Command P across the board. And even if you have to take an hour to remap one editor to the other, it's worth it. Okay, next, are there any new technologies that excite you in the coding world? Not specifically. I feel like at this point I have my general stack. So I use PHP and Laravel and Vue and Webpack and of course Laravel Mix on top of that. Nothing new. I mean, Vue would probably be the newest one, but at this point that's been out for a number of years at this point. That's probably the most recent one in my memory that truly excited me. When you realize, what I can now accomplish very, very easily with this, that is incredibly confusing and difficult and time-consuming without it. So Vue would be the most recent one, as surprising as it might be. These days, what I find myself mostly focusing on, as generic as it is just clarity, finding ways to write clearer code. And that is a long slog. It's not the easiest thing in the world. So often you will think you have found a clean API that works great, and then you come back to it a year later, and you're like, oh my gosh, why didn't I just do this? It's so much simpler and intuitive. But the year back, it didn't occur to you. So you should be happy that this is once again a sign that you have improved from the year before, but it's also a sign that it is a constant slog. Because trust me, a couple of years from today, you're going to look back on the code you're writing right this second, and you're going to think the exact same thing. Okay, two more, and then we're going to call it a day. Jeffrey, you seem to avoid things like event sourcing, domain-driven design, hexagonal architecture in your lessons. Is there a reason for this? Even if you don't use them personally, I think they still deserve a place on Lyricasts. I don't necessarily have an issue with any of those things specifically. But what I would say is you have to be careful about falling into this trap where you're constantly learning the next new thing that's suddenly going to make you a proper developer. The end goal is to solve problems for people, right? Or I would even say the end goal. You need to decide what the end goal is. And I think when it comes to programmers, they kind of fall into two different batches. You have some who want to learn code so that they can accomplish something. Maybe they want to build something themselves. Maybe they're a musician and they want to build a portal for their website and they want to do that themselves. That is an example of learning how to code in order to solve a problem that they have. Another example would be learning how to code. Well, of course, you want to make money, but also because the goal eventually is to take on projects, help people, and actually build and release things. Now, other people, of course, they have the same motivations, but on top of that, they are true students of the craft, I would say. They are students of code in general. They want to learn every facet of it. And there's nothing wrong with either one. You just have to decide what your goal is. It's an interesting thing. It's an interesting parallel. So in this case, like I don't have any real problem with event sourcing or hexagonal architecture. I've noticed in my own projects, for the types of things I build, they aren't benefiting me too much. So it's always a tricky thing as a teacher, answering this last point now, even if you don't use them, meaning me, they still deserve a place on Lyricasts. That could be true. But also it's difficult to teach something that I don't personally use. And I feel like that's sometimes a tricky thing to recommend and show newcomers how to do things that I don't even do myself. It's hard. I have to admit it's a hard thing because I've learned these things. I have a DDD book on my bookshelf right now. I've researched hexagonal architecture quite a bit. I use bits and pieces of all of them. And I think that's the end goal, really. It's like, learn lots of things and then take bits and pieces and apply it to your own style. But nonetheless, I do worry often about recommending approaches that I don't personally use. I have to be able to back it up at some point. But yeah, it's an interesting question. Good one. Okay, final one. Just a fun one. Jeffrey, I know you're a fan of the Nintendo Switch. What's your most anticipated upcoming game? Okay, good way to close up. I think most people would say Smash, of course, is the big one for 2018. I never got into it too much. For me, the big one would be Metroid Prime 4. And unfortunately, that's probably holiday 2019, if we're honest. But yeah, that's the big one I'm thinking about. I hope they release a Metroid Prime trilogy re-release or an HD version of that ahead of time. I assume they will to get people ready for number 4. But yeah, that's what I'm mostly anticipating at this point. All right, so I think that does it for today. My name is Jeffrey Way. As always, visit lyricasts.com/join if you're interested in learning more. Otherwise, I'll see you next time.